Random House Audio Publishing presents Bleachers by John Grisham, read for you by the author, with additional narration by Jack Crystal. Tuesday. The road to Rake Field ran beside the school, past the old band hall and the tennis courts, through a tunnel of two perfect rows of red and yellow maples, planted and paid for by the boosters, then over a small hill to a lower area covered with enough asphalt for 1,000 cars. The road stopped in front of an immense gate of brick and wrought iron that announced the presence of Rake Field, and beyond the gate was a chain-link fence that encircled the hallowed ground. On Friday nights, the entire town of Messina waited for the gate to open, then rushed to the bleachers, where seats were claimed and nervous pregame rituals were followed. The black paved pasture around Rakefield would overflow long before the opening kickoff, sending the out-of-town traffic into the dirt roads and alleys and remote parking zones behind the school's cafeteria and its baseball field. Opposing fans had a rough time in Messina, but not nearly as rough as the opposing teams. Driving slowly along the road to Rakefield was Neely Crenshaw. Slowly because he had not been back in many years. Slowly because when he saw the lights of the field, the memories came roaring back, as he knew they would. He rolled through the red and yellow maples, bright in their autumn foliage. Their trunks had been a foot thick in Neely's glory days, and now their branches touched above him, and their leaves dropped like snow and covered the road to Rake Field. It was late in the afternoon, in October, and a soft wind from the north chilled the air. He stopped his car near the gate and stared at the field. All movements were slow now. All thoughts weighted heavily with the sounds and images of another life. When he played, the field had no name. None was needed. Every person in Messina knew it simply as the field. "The boys are on the field early this morning," they would say at the cafes downtown. "What time are we cleaning up the field?" they would ask at the Rotary Club. "Rake says we need new visitors bleachers at the field," they would say at the boosters meeting. "Rake's got them on the field late tonight," they would say at the beer joints north of town. No piece of ground in Messina was more revered than the field, not even the cemetery. After Rake left, they named it after him. Neely was gone by then, of course, long gone, with no plans to return. Why he was returning now wasn't completely clear, but deep in his soul, he'd always known that this day would come, the day somewhere out there in the future when he was called back. He'd always known that Rake would eventually die, and of course there would be a funeral with hundreds of other former players packed around the casket, all wearing their Spartan green, all mourning the loss of a legend they loved and hated. But he told himself many times he would never return to the field as long as Rake was alive. In the distance behind the visitor stands were two practice fields, one with lights. No other school in the state had such a luxury, but then no other town worshipped its football as thoroughly and collectively as Messina. Neely could hear a coach's whistle and the thump and grunts of bodies hitting each other as the latest Spartan team got ready for Friday night. He walked through the gate and across the track, painted dark green, of course. The end zone grass was manicured and suitable for putting, but there were a few wild sprigs inching up the goalpost, and there was a patch or two of weeds in one corner, and now that he had noticed, Neely looked even closer and saw untrimmed growth along the edge of the track. In the glory days, dozens of volunteers gathered every Thursday afternoon and combed the field with gardening shears, snipping out every wayward blade of grass. The glory days were gone. They left with Rake. Now Messina football was played by mortals, and the town had lost its swagger. Coach Rake had once cursed loudly at a well-dressed gentleman who committed the sin of stepping onto the sacred Bermuda grass of the field. The gentleman backtracked, then walked around the sideline, and when he drew closer, Rake realized he had just cursed the mayor of Messina. The mayor was offended. Rake didn't care. No one walked on his field. The mayor, unaccustomed to being cursed, set in motion an ill-fated effort to fire Rake, who shrugged it off. The locals defeated the mayor 4-1 as soon as his name appeared on the next ballot. In those days, Eddie Rake had more political clout in Messina than all the politicians combined, and he thought nothing of it. Neely stuck to the sideline, slowly made his way toward the home stands. Then he stopped cold and took a deep breath as the pregame jitters hit him hard. The roar of a long-ago crowd came back, a crowd packed tightly together up there, in the bleachers, with the band in the center of things, blaring away with its endless renditions of the Spartan fight song. And on the sideline just a few feet away, he could see number 19 nervously warming up as the mob worshipped him. Number 19 was a high school All-American, a highly recruited quarterback with a golden arm, fast feet, plenty of size, maybe the greatest Messina ever produced.